This is a Relay Project. Real talk starts right now. Here's Ryan Jesperson.
How important is talent development when it comes to building, sustaining, growing a strong economy? Welcome to a special edition of Real Talk, a Real Talk roundtable featuring three movers and shakers from business advocacy groups, from post-secondary institutions. We've gathered three of the brightest minds in the province, and I believe wholeheartedly that you, no matter where you're coming from, a young person envisioning your future in career, in industry, a person who's established, or even someone who thinks they might know it all, these varied perspectives today on talent development, I think, will point us in the right direction to better understand the success on an individual and provincial front, how we get there, what different people are doing across the province and across the country to make success happen. It feels appropriate that this episode is presented by our friends at Rello, and they want to remind you that if you're feeling stuck right now, if you're in a situation where you're watching everybody else fire things up, you go, great, the theme of this Real Talk Roundtable, movers and shakers making things happen, and here I am at that mundane job that I just can't stand. Sounds like a career in real estate might be perfect for you. There's no better way to get started than with Rello's affordable online courses. They make it easy for you to pass your real estate exam, get your license so you can start setting your own hours and being your own boss. How good does unlimited earning potential sound? The best part about Rello is how committed they are to your success. They've got live instructors that host online exam prep sessions, plus a ton of resources to help you launch your business well after you've gotten accredited. And right now, because you heard about this on Real Talk, you're in a position to save 20% off any Rello course. Just use the promo code Real Talk. That's all one word, Real Talk, when you get started today at Rello.ca. Sean Effeth, a familiar face on this show. She's the president and CEO of the Alberta Chambers of Commerce, and you've brought a couple colleagues with you today to sit around this roundtable, which is excellent. Everybody in the Metro Edmonton region knows the CEO and the president of Northwest College, Carolyn Campbell, and we're also grateful to have Elise Sethna joining us, a senior manager in workforce transformation consulting with Deloitte. A warm welcome to the three of you, and thanks for being here. Shauna, why is it so important for us to be focusing on talent development right now?
It's critical. You know, our Alberta Perspectives research platform, we do a lot of processing of research related to labor market, to what's going on in the business climate in Alberta. And one of the things that we hear over and over again is just the shortages that we see in the Alberta landscape and the challenges that our businesses are facing trying to fill those gaps.
Okay, so the Alberta Chambers of Commerce has partnered with the Alberta Post-Secondary Network to establish this talent development task force, and we want to dig into this. This is right up your alley at Northwest College, Carolyn.
Well, it surely is, and I'm very happy to co-chair the task force with Shauna.
Yes.
We've got a great group on this, Ryan. We've got, like, the federal government is involved. We got chambers from all across Alberta. So it's very representative of industry, but we also have post-secondaries. So there's several post-secondaries that are involved with the task force, but we report back to the entire post-secondary group.
Okay, so can we set the scene here, kind of get a sense of the landscape when it comes to where we're maybe looking to develop more talent, where there's a ton of talent? Like, am I asking this? Are the questions too broad at this point? Do we need to start looking at specific industries?
I think we can start broad. That's okay, but we can certainly dive into specific industries. But right now, what we want to do with this task force is get the best labor market information available to Albertans that's best in class from all across North America. So we have pretty ambitious goals there with respect to getting a portal in place, workforce integrated learning, and surveys for labor market information.
Welcome to the show, Elise. You're making your Real Talk debut today.
Yes,
and
I
always love to give people credit when they go the extra mile. You drove up from Calgary to be with us in studio. So that's 2 points for you.
Yeah,
nice job. Can you tell us about, I'm always curious. I mean, you'll have these high level observations based on the work that you do with Deloitte. But my understanding is that you or your team partnered with the Saskatchewan Chamber with a specific mission, developing a talent strategy for the mining industry. Can you tell us what worked about that and why you're doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Deloitte, I essentially lead our Prairies workforce transformation practice. So I work with a lot of different organizations that are dealing with really complex workforce challenges, of which a lot of them are similar to what Shauna and Carolyn have mentioned. So we work with a lot of organizations that are dealing with pretty hard labor shortages. But I'd even go a little bit further to that to say it's not just labor shortage in that organizations are having a hard time filling vacancies, but it actually goes a step farther to skills shortages. So even when organizations are filling vacancies, they may not have the right skills required to actually support the work that they want to do now. And especially as we look 5-10 years down into the future, as skills start to change with the technology, et cetera.
I was just thinking that, like, as innovation happens, exactly, and it's always happening, of course, the skills required to maximize that innovation or even to install it.
And the work that we did with Saskatchewan was essentially taking that organizational lens, but actually bringing it to a provincial level. So we recognized that in Saskatchewan, they had a serious skills shortage and labor shortage in their mining industry that was preventing them from reaching some of their growth goals as a province and even to support Canada's growth goals. And so we essentially wrote a report that supported, in collaboration with the ecosystem, that really supported highlighting what the degree of that challenge was and where it actually existed in certain skills. And then we brought the whole ecosystem together. So when we think about government, post-secondary, we think about industry bodies, we think about the actual industry players themselves. And we used that forum to start to solve some of those challenges in real time. And what was really powerful about that is that the degree of this challenge can't be solved by an individual institution. It can't be solved individually by post-secondary. It can't be solved just by the government changing policy and regulation. It really needs to be an ecosystem play. And what we noticed in that summit is just the power of bringing those people together to really come up with really innovative solutions that integrate work into the learning that people have and really start to think about more creative solutions to even bring newcomers, indigenous populations, underserved populations into these critical skills.
Those are such good points that you make. And the idea of collaboration, of course, it makes sense, Shauna. People can see what the Alberta Chambers of Commerce are all about by visiting abchamber.ca. So you've got this really impressive membership roster. And I would imagine that members are in touch with the chamber and I know you do a bunch of polling. And of course, you do these surveys and you get hundreds and hundreds of responses. Last time we talked, I think it was the SEBA assistance, that deadline that actually hit yesterday, that January 18th deadline. Just one example. Of course, another role, I guess, that the Alberta Chambers of Commerce would play is to get ahead of some of this stuff before your members are telling you that they're encountering problems with things like staffing or skills shortages, so you can prepare the membership. Where are we in the context of that spectrum in this conversation? Are you hearing from members saying we're experiencing real labor or skill shortages right now?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've been hearing that for several years, which is really the impetus for the Talent Development Task Force. It was really, okay, so how do we look at this really collaborative approach to addressing the needs of our businesses and our members? And that's really how it came about. You know, how do we fill those skills gaps and really work with industry, work with post-secondary, work with government and all the key stakeholders to ensure that in our province, we have a really comprehensive strategy for how we're filling the gaps. And, you know, it's not just about, you know, we've already said this, but it's not just about the people filling the seats. It's about making sure they have the skills needed when they hit those seats and that we're giving them those work integrated learning opportunities that we're, you know, when those post-secondary students are graduating, whatever program they're graduating from, they've had some real world life experience and are able to slide into those roles, because that's what we're hearing from employers is, you know, we have these incredibly smart, talented students graduating, but they haven't had the actual work experience that they needed.
Yeah, sure.
So that's why, you know, really the Talent Development Task Force came to be. You know, how do we do the research to provide us with the knowledge that we need to understand what do those future skills look like? And then how do we train those students up to ensure that we're filling those gaps?
All four of us have something in common in our professions. And that, I don't know about you, but it's a challenge for me. I have to remind myself to zoom out all the time, right? Like we do a lot of talk for obvious reasons about oil and gas and the energy sector on this show. And then, but then yesterday we have, I don't know if you know the famed Canadian YouTuber, Quick Dick McDick, but he joined us yesterday from his farm in Tufnell, Saskatchewan. And we spent like almost an hour and a lot of it talking about agriculture. And then I go, oh yeah, there's so many compelling stories in ag. And then I'll talk to somebody that works in AI and machine learning. And I go, oh my gosh, we could do a whole series on AI. So I imagine you're probably not going to tell me that this is limited to one specific industry, but are there like a couple that are leading the charge that where there's, I mean, there may be real labor and skill shortages right now, but that would also represent a real opportunity?
Absolutely. And agriculture is one that we're honing in on. So our task force is a collaboration and co-funded federally through Prairies Can, provincially through the government of Alberta, but also through MyTax. And so with our MyTax, we have a business development lead through MyTax that's focusing specifically on agriculture in southern Alberta right
cool.
now. And so that's just one of them. But there, you know, there's several industries that are, you know, when you think about the trades, that's one that always comes up in terms of where we have a real shortage of skilled labor.
Yeah.
And you know, we could go on and on.
Isn't it interesting how even how we talk about the trades has changed a lot? Right? I was at the Oilers game last night. There's a guy wearing this snazzy cap. It just says respect blue collar. And I was like, I like that. I mean, yeah. I'm an alumna of SAIT down in Calgary. And I noticed that they're one of the schools that started putting polytechnic in its title. Mm-hmm. Like the whole attitude is changing, isn't it, Carolyn?
I think it is. And I mean, what we're looking at is a real great system of pathways through our post-secondary educational institutions. Just coming back to AI and machine learning for a minute as an example, there are, I don't know how many students graduating from the University of Alberta in AI. As such, what Norquest has done, because we power the front lines of the economy, is said, let's get in a machine learning analyst program. We're going to need the front lines for all of the people that are creating the big jobs. Let's make sure we get those office workers and the machine learning analysts. The first year we opened the program was not that long ago. That was 2 years ago. We had 30 people.
Yeah.
We now have 198 people. I know. So it's a great story. And then down back to workforce integrated learning, the kind of workforce integrated learning that we see all across the province is pretty exemplary. And it has been part of the Alberta 2030 plan to increase workforce integrated learning. Post-secondaries, I think, come in at about 80%. All across the system, which is really impressive. And when you think about, like, there could be a lift in some programs for some organizations. I know they're really working on the humanities, et cetera. For some, like Norquest or Bow Valley College or some of the rural colleges and polytechs, you know, definitely we have got some advantages in our close relationships with industry, but we've got some cool stories of naturally healthcare. You know, we do tons of workforce integrated learning in healthcare, tons in business. But I also was talking with our woman, Allison Reeves, who runs the workforce integrated learning for Norquest, because we're at 100% of our programs doing workforce integrated learning, which is incredible. And she gave me some great stories about students in community support programs working with Canterbury Court, students working with high schools to do poverty simulations for United Way, students working with Mustard Seed to bring socks to people. So, you know, it really runs the gamut of business, healthcare, and social supports, and then scale that up across post-secondaries. And I think you've got a pretty good system here. And that's something that the task force is focusing on.
I don't know that you're like here to pick a fight with universities.
No.
Feel free.
I'm not because no, we work so great together.
And of course, there's like always a role. You're going to need the researchers at the U of A and the U of C. And of course, there's innovation there and this is happening. But is it safe to say that colleges like Norquest in recent history, like you talk about that AI program, and what is that year over year? I mean, enrollment is growing like 300 or 500%. That's wild.
It's incredible.
Enrollment, so how do you see the role changing for Norquest in the next, you know, 3, 5, 10 years?
We sure do. We have a new strategic plan called Norquest 2030. We are who we include, and it's about being as barrier-free and welcoming as we can to as many students as we can. And that's domestic students and international students. Domestic students, like, hold on to your hat. We have grown, even just in the last 3 years, from, say, 500 international students to 3,700 international students. Great story. for Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And I know colleges across Alberta are seeing the same thing. So this is very powerful. But our students are coming from India, countries all across Africa, Brazil, Vietnam, Philippines. Yeah. So please come and visit the college because it's a very exciting place to be.
Well, people can check out norquest.ca. We'll put it in the show notes. I like just, what do you call it, the tagline, like just from class to career. That's just, yeah. It kind of sums it up, right?
Props to our team there. When I saw on a billboard, I had called our VP marketing and said, good job. I like that.
It works. And I mean, interesting to hear Carolyn talk about the growth of the international student population. I mean, I remember when we're setting this business up, this talk show, right? And it's about 3 years ago. And it was, in a sense, still is kind of innovative. You don't see a lot of independent live streaming daily entities. And a lot of people that know what they're talking about were saying to us, you should farm your website out to India. You should farm your production out here. You know, you should farm like all of the stuff because there's so much talent internationally. Now, that's just our industry. That's just this tiny little microcosm. But big picture, in the role that you have at Deloitte, I imagine you're seeing this all the time, which means that local talent, of course, needs to be well equipped to be competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just love the trend that you guys are talking about creating agility in the system, about how do you speed up the labor market attachment between where people are learning those skills and where they can apply those skills, and starting to reduce the friction between the job seeker and the employer. And that's certainly true for where local talent comes in Alberta, but also when we even think about newcomers to Canada, or when we think about Alberta and the population growth that's coming interprovincially, it's really about how do you speed up thinking about what skills do those people bring to the province? What skills do those people bring to the province? And how can we speed up figuring out, you know, where are they best applied and start to match them to the right programs? And that's where we're starting to see, as you said, that work integrated learning being really successful in being able to do that. When we think about even like a 1950s apprenticeship model, what we're seeing with colleges like Norquest is starting to think about how do you apply and modernize that apprenticeship program to even be beyond blue collar workers, but across almost all.
Okay,
roles.
So to put you on the spot, what would be an example of modernizing? Because I'm so old school in my thinking, I'm like, yeah, it's called a practicum. It's like job placement. They've been doing it forever and it works. And you're like rolling your eyes going, oh my gosh, that's an 80-year-old model. What's an example of a present day model that's really working well?
Yeah, essentially it's when you start to, instead of going into a job, and starting to get that work integrated learning once you're at the job, how do you actually bring people into the job earlier? So even when they're in a post-secondary program, starting to integrate in part of that learning being in the work itself. So when you start to think about even courses that are partnering with industry that then almost guarantee a job post that internship.
You know, Alberta's premier was musing about this a while ago. We were talking about it on the show, and I know a lot of people immediately kind of bristled at the idea that Danielle Smith had thrown out there, because it was essentially like framing it unfairly. You say they're encouraging people to drop out in grade 10 and enter industry, but other people are going, well, not really. It's kind of like a fast track program for people that see careers for themselves in the oil field or in energy or whatever. You know what I mean? But it breaks convention, or at least in this part of the world. And people are unfamiliar with it, because I think a lot of times we get into this idea where it's like you go from K to 12, yeah, and then maybe if your parents let you, you go take a year and travel Europe, and then, you know, and then you go do your 4-year thing, and then you step into your job, and that's not always going to work for everybody or be the smartest play.
Absolutely not. And I was really fortunate to sit on the Premier's Career Education Task Force last year, which those were some of the findings that came out of all of the meetings and all of the conversations, is that we need to get at these students younger to give them opportunities to experience some of these different industries, different professions, to make sure that, you know, as they're learning through high school, they're actually paying attention to the realities of those skills that they're going to need in the different professions, and how do they pick and choose, but also how do they get to try it out and make sure that they like it before they commit to those 4 years
right.
of education.
And it's not going to be for everybody, right? Like,
no.
I mean, some kids in grade 8 and 9 know exactly what they want to do, and some at like age 25 are still not 100% sure.
Or some, you know, in their 50s still don't know what they want to do.
That's right.
You know, we're always evolving as individuals, but really adolescents and young adults are, you know, they have a difficult time choosing, picking and choosing. And even more so in this day and age, because, you know, they have so much more information thrown at them and there's so many different opportunities for them. And we're seeing some of this stuff already happening. I mean, there's dual credit programs already where students are taking credit towards their university education in some of the roles that they're taking on during high school. So it has been seen, but you know, the earlier that we can get them, this was the what we found through this task force, is the earlier that we can get them starting to think about that career, the easier it is for them to make those choices around, you know, what courses do they need to take, what do they need to be focusing on in terms of specializations or additional credits that they need to be taking or volunteer positions that they should be looking at in order to ensure that they're going to be able to get into that situation when they graduate.
It's interesting, right? Because you've got specific employers, maybe like you're working with at Deloitte, or you've got industries or stakeholders. The Alberta Chamber gets together hundreds of them at a time. And then you've got the post-secondaries, which of course are nothing without the students. I mean, how much of post-secondary evolution, or like I might call it service delivery or whatever your preferred term would be, how much of that is driven by what the students are asking for, about what the students want?
So much. So we actually did a survey of our academic officers, the provost, to ask them how much work they put into engaging with students in order to determine what programs should keep going or necessarily not. And we found that the students give us really, really good intel, notwithstanding the fact that whether they, you know, if they stop enrolling in programs, that's starting to give you an answer maybe about where that program's going. And it's certainly dovetailed with other information that we have from employers, from government, from labor market, from reports and such. But students give us very good intel, and then they give us great intel about how we can continuously improve our programs.
Okay, we're hanging out. That was Carolyn Campbell. She's the CEO, president at Northwest College, joined by Elise Sethna, a senior manager at Deloitte, a specialist in workforce transformation consulting, and of course, Shauna Feth, the president and CEO of the Alberta Chambers of Commerce. Shauna, who's we look to the first Monday of every month for an eye on Alberta business today. If you're just tuning in, on the Mixler live streaming audio app presented by California Closets, we're talking about talent development. We're talking about preparing people and the province for economic success transformation in some circumstances in the months and years to come. When we come back in just a quick second, I want to talk about maybe challenges unique to Alberta. I want to talk about maybe regulatory hurdles that are in the way, what needs to change, in other words, and what regions and countries around the world are leading in the competition for talent and how they're doing it. It feels like a perfect time to remind you that our friends at Kubi Renewable Energy have one simple and clear message for you right now, and that is that they are always hiring. It doesn't matter when you're hearing this, they are always hiring at Kubi Renewable Energy. You can see them online at kubi.ca. Follow the careers link to learn more about what they're looking for. They're looking for engineers. The engineers are the busiest people on their team this time of year, of course, because, you know, they're not sending their installers up on the roof, but the engineers are designing those installs. They're also looking for sales personnel, apprentices, journeymen, office managers, you name it. Rapidly expanding across the province of Alberta into BC as well, in Kamloops, Lethbridge, Calgary, and Edmonton. A lot of opportunity for you to get started. Be part of Canada's green energy movement by working at Kubi Renewable Energy. At Friesen Brothers, they know that families are trying to make those dollars stretch further than ever before right now. And a big one is, of course, the cost of groceries. At Friesen Brothers, they want to remind you the first of every single month is 15% of all grocery purchases of $75 or more, plus in their flyer, which you can find online at friesen.com or, of course, in store. They've got that Family Essentials flyer that we love. Great ideas, meals, healthy meals for your family, comfort food with videos, the how-to. If you've ever wondered what's the best way to put a shepherd's pie together, they've got it for you at friesen.com. For more than 65 years, Friesen Brothers has been Alberta-grown and Alberta-owned. And to our friends that have experienced the worst that weather like this brings, you've navigated the headache over the last couple of days of burst pipes, your drains are frozen, and you got a mess to deal with. Number one, you're not going to want to delay. I don't have to talk to you about black mold. Number two, you want to make sure you can trust your contractor. We trust Complete Care Restoration. They're the ones that built our beautiful
historic Mercer Warehouse Studio, and they're the ones that we recommend wholeheartedly with two thumbs up. For more than 25 years, they have been restoring property and rebuilding peace of mind. You can find them under the sponsors link on our website, ryanjesperson.com, or at completecarerestoration.ca. Elise Setha of Deloitte, Carolyn Campbell of Norquest College, and Shauna Feth, the Alberta Chambers of Commerce, joining us on this Real Talk Roundtable on talent development. What stands in the way of talent developers or industry leaders in the province of Alberta? Are there some unique challenges that maybe someone in Ontario or New Brunswick might not face?
Well, I think, globally, we face the challenge of just being able to get people into the seats. And, you know, there's always, getting people credentialed. And as people are transitioning, whether they're coming in from other countries or other provinces, the credentialing piece is always a challenge through the associations. And how do we speed up that? You know, is there a way to micro-credential versus having to go back and do, you know, the full, whatever it is, 2 or 3 years that's needed? When we see people coming in from other countries, we know there's, you know, definitely challenges with that credential piece and actually getting people into the jobs that they've been trained for in other countries. So that's a big challenge. And that's one that we're really talking about on the task force as we look at, you know, micro credentials and how do we get them into those jobs quicker as they're coming into the province.
Elise, who's doing a really good job of that? Like when you look across the country or around the world.
Yeah.
Who's leading the charge?
Yeah, and I'll speak to that. I want to follow up on one thing. I think micro-credentialing is a huge trend that we're starting to see to speed up the labor market attachment for a lot of those populations. But it's only as successful if the employers actually accept the micro-credentials that post-secondary networks are actually putting out. And so one jurisdiction that we've actually seen do this really well is post-pandemic, Australia actually declared a national skills emergency.
Wow.
They actually saw that the skills shortage was seen as a considerable threat to their economy. And so they stood up a statutory body that was independently tasked with looking at new emerging current needs for skills training workforce. And through that, it unlocked a bunch of different funding that led to some really cool projects across the country, one of which happened in New South Wales, where they essentially set up a 24/7 digital reskilling operation through one of their federally funded vocational colleges that put out micro-credentials specific to employer needs on critical skills.
Huh.
And we're actually able to, within the first year of opening that program that was federally funded, was able to put out about 500 units of learning, so 500 different skills that were required in the industry, and upskill thousands of students in that first year.
Huh. I'm thinking like of a local application of that. Tell me if I'm way off, but I've heard a lot of people talking about the future of Alberta energy and how there are so many people right now. Let's say in that spot of like, I don't know, what's the spot where you start getting nervous that you're too old to start a new career but too young to retire? Is that like 35 to 55, would you say?
And never too old.
Well, I agree. I mean, I agree. Yeah. I do agree. But yeah. Like, you know, for example, let's say like there's a guy out there. Let's paint this hypothetical.
Yeah.
And he's a driller. And he's a really good driller. And so every single time that he hears somebody talk about, you know, the world going off oil and gas, yeah, this person immediately bristles because what they feel is a threat to their family's livelihood. And everybody can understand why that person would feel that way. However, somebody that's really bullish on like the future of geothermal energy would say, we are going to need talented drillers, right? And you have all of the skills that we need. Maybe you need to level up some learning, but yeah, you're basically already there. And all of a sudden, this person can go, holy smokes. I mean, I may have skills applicable for the next 100 years, right?
Exactly. It's really about thinking about those transferable skills and how those transferable skills, even if it's just a little bit of upskilling that's required, we're working at a pace that can't wait for 4 years of a new post-secondary degree. And so the rise of these sort of micro-credentials that maybe fill a little bit of those gaps and then combined with some of that work-integrated learning will get them into a seat that both can apply the skills that they currently have with also what the business businesses need into the future.
Yeah, Plain Power is right on the live chat and says, never stop learning. But
continuous learning.
Continuous Absolutely. Learning. You
the
know,
the half-life of a skill in some of our Deloitte research has shown that it's 2.5 years. If you think about what that actually means, a half-life is essentially if you get a skill today, in 2.5 years, that skill is half as valuable. And so the speed at which you have to be upskilling and reskilling to meet the pace of that change is huge. And that's where it takes the ecosystem.
Yeah, I don't know why I immediately thought about, you know, in our line of work and in messaging and storytelling, actually in all of our lines of work, this is important, but the role of social media and how to understand it and leverage its power and utilize it and create calls to action. Mm-hmm. And you're right, if you were an expert in MySpace, it's irrelevant now. It doesn't matter if you were the best in the world at it, right? If you're the best in the world at Facebook, maybe that's a bad example, but you know, obviously you always got to know then you got to be the best at TikTok now. And in 2 years, you're going to have to be the best at the next one.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? Yeah. So yeah. Obviously this is something that your students are hyper aware of. So how does a big post-secondary people look at this and they talk about how smaller businesses are more nimble. And then they talk about big industries. It's like trying to turn around a cruise ship. How can post-secondaries remain nimble?
And we do. And, you know, the thing is that at Northwest and at many of the colleges and polytechs, students are older. They're 28 years old is the average age of the Northwest student.
That's the average.
Average
That's
age
amazing.
Is 28. I know. So they are like, so people are being bold and they're being ambitious and curious and they're coming back and they're researching their programs. And because we have a very high rate of graduating people into jobs, they have a confidence about what they're studying. But I just want to go back to a couple things people have said. First, we do have like a program and we're not running it right now, but we can run it intermittently to help people who have been in the oil and gas sector transition to new technologies still in the oil and gas sector or in adjacent sectors. And it's been highly successful. So we can go back and people can get excited about the possibility of learning and trying something new. You talked about regulatory and systems things. And I do want to share like one case study, if that's helpful.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So thinking about healthcare, because we started talking about what are the jobs where we're going to need to have like more employees in the future. And we're 33,000 employees short by 2025 in Alberta. And we're predicting to be 46,000 employees short by 2030. Those are largely in healthcare, construction, office workers, engineers, and trades. So let's come to
so
healthcare.
Like everybody.
Well, lots, right? Yeah. But let's come to healthcare. So we get about 1,200 applications per term, and we have three terms for licensed practical nurses. We can take 357 or so applicants and get them into the program per term. But there's probably double that many that would be good. The reason why we can't take more is that there are not that many practicums for them to go to. So a system piece that we, if we could get more practicums, would actually down the road enable us to get more healthcare workers out there. And along the lines of what you were saying too, Elise, with innovations, we have been adding in a lot more simulation into the college. So if you were to come into Northwest and go through the fourth floor, it looks like a hospital. And we have mannequins that are pretty much like very real. You can give them.
These are like those $200,000
mannequins. Yeah. And that's really helping too and making a big difference.
Those
and virtual
amazing.
Reality. Yeah, it's good.
Hey, so what happens when like Alberta's premier or any, you know, senior elected official starts musing around like, I don't know, maybe we should address the doctor shortage by allowing nurse practitioners to open their own clinics. And then all of a sudden, you know, I mean, a talk show like this, we got 100 angles on it. We're talking to the head of Alberta's doctors and we're talking to the health minister and we're talking to the health critic. And some people think it's an amazing idea and others. But at the end of the day, they're going, this policy could change in the next 6 months. And then all of a sudden, you could have an influx of people. You're going to be drawing talent, in theory, to Alberta, create the opportunities. Like, you've got to be, as an education institute, a post-secondary institution, paying attention to stuff like that. And you almost have to see it coming 2 years out, don't you?
We do. And we are so on top of this. I mean, we have a whole group that works on data analytics, and they're working very closely with the academics. And we have a workforce advisory council, and then we have program advisory council. I think there's 250 people working that are part of industry that work with our communities within the college to make sure that the programs that we're offering are still relevant.
Okay, so I love this. You know, we have like the smartest and most engaged talk audience in the country, okay? So we got to get to the live chat because, and I want to just throw a bunch of stuff out there and then have you respond to it. So if something catches your ear, catches your eye, let me know and we'll get to it. But, you know, Lauren, for example, says generational workers demand a balanced life of work and pleasure. My generation didn't do that, but I like the idea. You know, I noticed that somebody else said that, like, you know, Kimberly says, you're all making this sound like this is a really good thing. I don't know if she's talking about us or the people in the chat. She says, but it sounds to me like the opposite of work-life balance. You know, Tracy says, unfortunately, there are some rising tides around paid versus unpaid work experience. You know, for example, engineers have paid while nurses do not, which is interesting. Mark's in here talking about massive opportunities in law. He says, representing things like landowners and things like that. He says, almost nobody seems to be working in that area. Tracy's talking about training supported by loans, grants, bursaries, you know, the province receiving money from the feds for grant funded training. I mean, there's so many different angles on this. Why don't we talk about the work-life balance?
Yeah.
Because you got to be, you've got to be as an industry or even a province for that matter, jurisdiction, appealing to what the next generation of talent is looking for and prioritizing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing a bunch of this at Deloitte and have done a bunch of research into new worker preferences. And we're seeing a lot of differences between generations of talent. And it's an interesting challenge right now because you're seeing a lot of retirements that are leading to some of these labor shortages and the new generation of talent requiring something very different. And when we think about kind of 30 years back, the mentality of a workforce was always, you know, you're lucky to have a job. And now the mentality is we're lucky to have you. And in students coming up, and especially younger generations of talent from millennials to Gen Z, the mentality is you're lucky to have me. And so I love the analogy of thinking about a job as a product and the employee as, or the potential job seeker, as a consumer. And when you start to think about it in that way, you really shift how you think about innovating around jobs and actually making them more attractive. And especially post-pandemic, we're seeing a lot of trends towards, especially younger generations of talent, desiring more of that flexibility in how, when, and where they work. And this goes far beyond the conversation of in the office, but actually goes further to how do you create flexibility within those jobs themselves. So it's definitely pushing employers, knowing those realities, to think differently about how they attract and retain the skilled talent that they need.
I want to go into uncomfortable areas, because if we don't do this as a talk show, what are we even doing? I hear this a lot. Alberta Girl says post-secondary spots are being monopolized by foreign students. And now kids need way more money and like 85% to even get into university. I don't know if that's true or not. What's your experience?
Well, we certainly are seeing more international students at Norquest, but here's what's the difference between Alberta and Ontario. And there's been enough written about Ontario that I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school. But there have been some schools that are getting up to anywhere from 60, 65, 67%. International students. Those students are carrying the financial load for those organizations.
Because they're paying way more.
Absolutely. And what's ended up happening is that's inextricably tied to the housing crisis then in Ontario. In Alberta, we have a different situation. So I'll just speak for Norquest here, but we have made a decision, and this was not a decision made with government. It was not a decision imposed upon us. Certainly, I collaborate with government and make sure we talk about it so that they're aware of where we're keeping our percentages. But we're trying to keep to 33-35% international students.
One in three.
Sure. But they're largely attracted to our healthcare program, our early childhood program, and our business program. But the international students are bringing a real richness to campus. We're learning a lot from them. We're seeing a real diversity now of our international students. And I think, you know, we're seeing, like, we have exciting events that are happening. And frankly, we need the students to get into the workforce, to power those front lines of the workforce, because we're going to be, as I mentioned earlier, 33,000 people
short. I was just
thinking
that.
So it's,
where are they going to come
from?
We're
in Alberta. We're doing this very well, I submit.
So Elon Musk, You guys have heard of him, I think, probably. You've heard of Elon Musk. He tweeted on January 3rd, did you see this? In the context of Harvard in particular, but on diversity, equity, inclusion, says the richest man in the world, DEI is just another word for racism. And shame on anyone who uses it. Well, he gets absolutely blasted for the comment by a ton of people, probably most prominently fellow billionaire Mark Cuban, who just tacked on a few more billions into his bank account by selling much of his shares in the Dallas Mavericks. What role does DEI play? Depending, it seems to me, as a talk host on who you talk to, it's either incredibly important or maybe the pendulum is swinging back, as some people are saying. Can we talk about DEI?
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, Carolyn can talk about it. Norquest does this spectacularly in the post-secondary realm in terms of the diversity that you see on their campus and their Indigenous spaces and all of the things that they're doing to be really inclusive to that population that's coming in that would maybe look or sound different than our average Alberta students. So she can talk to that. But from a task force perspective, from an Alberta Chambers perspective, this is critically important to us. And it's really, you know, it's evolving every day, really, in terms of how do we really, really, in an authentic way, include all individuals in our province, all entrepreneurs in our province into the chamber banner, the task force banner. How do we make sure that everybody is, you know, felt like they are really authentically engaged in that process, whatever that may be, if they're an entrepreneur, if they're a student, if they're looking at, you know, their newcomers, just even how they're getting into those situations where they can meet the future employers. How are we creating those safe spaces with the task force, with our work integrated learning programs? So from our perspective at the Alberta Chambers and with the task force, it's incredibly important to us that we are, you know, we need all of these individuals. We need all of the talent that we have in the province. You know, Carolyn said it, we're looking at tens of thousands of jobs that we're going to need to fill over the course of the next few years. And we're not going to be able to do that just domestically. We need to make sure that we're embracing everybody coming in and all those people that we know. You know, I mean, the premier has said, you know, by 2050, she wants to be a population of 10 million. Well, that's not going to happen.
That's wild, by the way, if you think about it.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, it was in the throne speech. But, you know, when you think about that, it's actually mind boggling. And so if we're not really embracing diversity and inclusion, just as a province, it's going to be really difficult to integrate these individuals into the roles that we need them to fill in all of these different industries.
And DEI can be a million things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it can be Indigenous populations. It can be women in male-dominated industries. It could be older workers returning to the work. I mean, there's a million ways to approach it.
Well, in Indigenous populations at the college have grown. People who self-identify as Indigenous have grown at the college to now 1,600 students.
What's the total student population?
Phenomenal. 10,000 full-time students, okay. But 18,000 students all in.
Wow.
Yeah, no, the college is now the seventh largest post-secondary educational institution in the province, fastest growing. So we're mindful of how we're doing that. And what we did, because we wanted to have more Indigenous students, is we reduced, like we actually got rid of the application fee. And we created floors so that you would need to have a certain number of Indigenous students in programs. And I'll give you one more anecdote about what that looks like on campus. But we have Miapowatsuan, which is our student center. And I visit it regularly. And my first year when I started visiting and we were just getting this policy in place of making sure that we were more accessible for Indigenous students, we saw several come in and they were like getting to know one another and they were just getting started with their learning and mostly taking academic upgrading. This fall I went in and there was a table full of people in scrubs and mostly women in scrubs and they were Indigenous students and they were sitting up so straight and I was like, what are you studying? I'm unit clerk, I'm pharmacy tech, I'm licensed practical nurse. And it was beautiful, the story of watching how, you know, when you are a welcoming place, when you were doing like purposeful regulatory things within our college, making administrative decisions to be welcoming, not only that with Indigenous students, but recall when people are making decisions from overseas about what school they want to go to, they're making a business decision. And so they are checking the websites of organizations and they are testing whether or not you will be a welcoming place for them to come.
Hmm. I'd love to hear your take on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is your wheelhouse.
Yeah. And you know, when we bring it back to the initial challenge that we discussed around the labor shortage and the skills shortage, the organizations that we're working with that are dealing with this, the automatic reaction, and this was reinforced by some of the recent research that the chambers did, is really they're fishing in an empty pond for the labor that they're looking for. And the automatic response is to fish harder in the same pond. They look at the same profile, the narrow profile of the talent that might fit a pipe fitter today. But really, the solution to that is to take more of a skills-based approach. And when you take a skills-based approach, it actually enables more diverse talent to get into the workforce, because maybe they don't have the exact experience or college degree that's required for a certain job today. But if you actually look at it from a skills perspective, you can get a lot more creative around how you actually upskill that person through many of the things that the task force is doing around work integrated learning, micro-credentialing, et cetera, to be able to get those folks into the workforce. So that really is the key there. But if you were to create those pathways for that diverse talent, then you actually need to create an inclusive environment where they actually want to be there.
Elise, go ahead.
I was just going to jump in and say, but there's a role there too for industry.
Absolutely.
Businesses also need to understand that they may need to make accommodations as well in order to integrate some of these individuals into their workforces. And I think that's a part that's been missing that we're really talking about now is, you know, how do we ensure that as business owners, we're doing everything that we can to make it accessible for these individuals that are, you know, underutilized, underserviced in the
market. Can you give an example or like something you've seen of a business that did a really good job or where you see an opportunity for businesses to do something specific like what you're talking about?
Yeah, well, we're actually working on a big project right now across the province on this specific file on underutilized employees, long-term unemployed. Some of the populations we're talking about, like Indigenous, seniors, other abled individuals, and really it's a dual conversation that we're having when we're pairing these individuals up with employers is that, you know, there's going to need to be accommodations. You know, if you have another abled individual, you need to make accommodations. You're going to have to make sure that they can access their workstation, that they can access the break room, that they can get everywhere that they need to get in your business.
Yeah. There seems to be, I don't know, it's interesting. I'm monitoring the live chat and then there's like not everybody's on the same page, which is beautiful. That's a beautiful thing. But there seems to be kind of this impression that some people have that and here's the phrase I'm sure you won't prefer is the diversity hire. Nobody wants to be the diversity hire, right? Because it implies that you didn't earn the position. I remember there was a bit of a flare up in Edmonton's broadcasting community a while ago. So a new sports talk radio station launches and there's not a single female on the roster of hosts. And one of their prominent male hosts does an interview and says, I don't think it matters. And that kind of resonated pretty loudly. So to her credit, the female program director at the radio station comes on this show. And I ask her, is it important to have female radio hosts? And she says, honestly, she says, my career in media, I've always just hired the best person for the job. And so now I see people in this live chat saying, I don't support diversity, equity, inclusion, because I believe it should be the best person for the job. Can the two coexist?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're saying. I think that we're saying that there are shortages, not that people are replacing maybe the best person for a diversity hire, but actually that there's shortages out there that we need to be skilling up the right people with the right skills and the right jobs and reducing that friction where it exists.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Did you want to talk to that?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying, Elise. I think we are saying the same thing, we are hiring the best people in the jobs and we're at the same time getting more diverse workforces.
Yeah, that's how a population grows. Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, it just seems to me to be obvious. But I love this from Michael. His personal testimony in the chat says, I made a career change in my early 30s. He says, 16 years later, I'm still at it as a paramedic. Michael, thank you for your service. He says, I deliberately researched a career that is almost recession-proof, especially in a boom or bust province like Alberta. Meantime, and I want to fact check this because Garth is chiming in. Garth says, I'm sorry, but my experience as a supervisor is that this coming generation lacks drive, passion, and grit, and is also has an imbalanced sense of entitlement. We've always thought that about the younger generation. Uh-huh. Haven't we thought that for 200 years?
But you know what? Now it slays me in the heart because I have 26-year-old sons, right? Who I see as being very hard workers. And and actually, you know what's so interesting is they talk amongst themselves, and I'm watching them actually come back to Edmonton. This I know, I'm getting tangential a little bit. But I'm seeing a whole bunch of my son's friends that moved away from Edmonton are coming back to Edmonton because they're like, it's like a constant tailgate party here if you come down to the Ice District, right? It's so fun. You can get a house here. They're making friends here. They're having community here. They say you need like 5 people in your community just to feel, you know, that you can make a life. And we've got, can I put a plug in? Post-secondary all over the place for whatever you need. And just coming back to the task force again for a bit, like it's just one of the things that we're working on is really making sure that there's clarity for Albertans around how seamlessly you can move through academic upgrading, dual credit, into college, polytechnic, university, and then maybe back around again. You know, some of our machine learning students at the college are grad students from the U of A, and they've come back and they want to do this as a job. So, and the micro credentials. So, you know, if what we're trying to do with this task force is if we can pull that whole system together and then bring in groups like Deloitte and other like points, like we've talked to Adam Legg at the Business Council, My Tax is full of information. Mm-hmm. I think what we're really trying to do is build that ecosystem of great information that will ensure that like the next workforce is well equipped.
So, you know, the one voice or one of the voices we don't have around the table, we can't put an elected official in the hot seat right now. And we could probably get a mayor sitting in here. We could get obviously a jobs minister, a provincial jobs minister in here. We could get a federal minister in here. What role do elected officials, I mean, obviously when you're talking about purse strings, when you're talking about big multi-billion dollar initiatives, it all comes back to the politics of it. Are politicians, Shauna, in your assessment, aware of what we've been talking about here? I mean, where do we stand in that context?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've met with almost all of the ministers provincially, and almost every single one of them has skills as part of their mandate letter, because it doesn't matter where you're at, where you're sitting, what portfolio you have, there's just skills gaps everywhere, and they're well aware of it. And, you know, the premier has, you know, kind of said to these ministers, let's collaborate. And that's where this is so important, is that, you know, at that provincial level, you know, and we could talk federally and locally as well, but I do know at the provincial level, that level of collaboration and the need to make sure cross-ministry strategies are in place for our workforce going forward is really important.
I've sure appreciated this conversation. I mean, time is flying here, and I know that there's like a million other things we could get to. So I love it at the end of a conversation like this, just to give you all a chance to sort of tie everything up with a bow. Like if there's one thing that we've not yet discussed or something that you think that the person, I don't know, I like the average age of Norquist. Let's say we got a 28-year-old listening to this podcast right now while they're walking their dog or they're riding their bike home from you crazy winter cyclist. Good on ya. You know, people that you want them to walk with something, you know, to take something away from this. And I'm going to put you on the spot first, Elise. What your closing statement, so to speak?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've loved this conversation. It's been an honor to be a part of it. And I think it just speaks to the power of that ecosystem-driven approach. And really, my dream is I see so much opportunity for Alberta. I think, just as you said, Carolyn, we're leading in this area. The task force is something that we haven't seen in other jurisdictions. And so I would say it's really important that this is a demand-led system. And that comes from both the employers articulating what are the needs of the skills that they require now and into the future. And even from a student perspective, we talked about different workforce expectations. We need to be keen to that and bring those things together to really be able to build a system that reduces that friction between the job seeker and the employer. And I think it can only happen when all the different groups are working together.
Well said. Carolyn?
The more data we have, the more workforce integrated learning opportunities we have, the more intel we collect, the stronger we get, the smarter we get, the more we can work together. And for me, that means what's the greater good? What's our higher purpose of all of that? And so we think a lot about with respect to purpose. What is our social contribution? What is our economic contribution? How are we helping grow the GDP of this province? And then what's our contribution to downtown Edmonton as well? And so then we think of some of the social issues that are in front of us right now. And I'm even going to talk about the Navigation Center that is right across the street from Northwest College. We're thinking immediately about what can we do to help. So if there's workforce integrated learning opportunities for our students to go over and try to make someone's life a little bit better, we're going to do that. And I would really hope that the 28-year-old listening is kind of looking at their life in a more wholesome way.
I want to pause with you. We're going to press pause on the wrap. And then Shauna, you'll take us home in just a second. But I want to squeeze Linda's comment here. When someone says, hey, you haven't touched on this, that always gets my attention. And Linda says, what's bothering me about this conversation is that we're all viewing it from the corporate view and not from the view that you can only move through levels of education with money. Is that the, like when it comes to the student that requires financial assistance, the student that's coming, I mean, you're talking about in some circumstances, people that have such wonder, and this is globally an issue, but people that have such incredible potential that will never realize it because of systemic factors that hold them down.
Several things. So first, Northwest has decided we're going to start lobbying the federal government a lot more. And one of the things we have been talking about is access to academic upgrading for free for Indigenous peoples after the age of 20. The next thing is we have a robust set of bursaries. So I would encourage her to take a look at that if that's something that might interest her. And it's growing all the time. And we've got a new philanthropic campaign that's getting ready to add more bursaries. It's called Women in STEM. And one of the things we're trying to do is get more women in STEM programs. And it's full freight. It even covers their bus passes and their daycare.
Awesome. That's amazing. Shauna, bring us home.
Yeah, sure. So just really thank you for having us, Ryan. This
Anytime.
Has been a fantastic conversation. And I feel really proud to be sitting around the table and be a part of this task force because, you know, we really believe this comprehensive strategy towards looking at how we are going to really support Alberta and skills development in the province. That's, you know, we're looking at all of the different lenses and we're using all of those perspectives to support just getting the best people into those roles and filling those gaps that we have. And I would just close out by saying that anybody who wants to be a part of the data that's so critically important, right now we do have one of our labor market information surveys out on Alberta Perspectives. And I would just encourage them to share their thoughts, share their perspectives in terms of what's going on in the province of Alberta.
It's
running till the end of January.
I didn't mean to step on your toes there, but
okay.
You're always up to something at the Alberta Chambers of Commerce, which is great. It seems like anytime I pick your brain, even off camera, shoot you a text about something, you're like, oh, we've actually got like 600 stakeholders that just chimed in on that. I go, that's a pretty good sample size. You can find out more there at abchamber.ca. That's Shauna Feth, the president and CEO of the Alberta Chambers of Commerce. And you can get her eye on Alberta business the first Monday of every month here on Real Talk. An honor to have Carolyn Campbell in the house as well, CEO and president of Northwest College. I didn't even squeeze in a mention of your incredible art career, and I should have. I did you a disservice there. You are a celebrated artist.
You didn't have to.
Amazing painter. So nice. I'm such a fan. One day I will buy one of your paintings and hang it in this studio.
Thanks,
Carolyn. But amazing job at Northwest College. And Elise Sethna, who drove up here from Calgary to join us in the Real Talk studio, the senior manager of the Workforce Transformation Consulting Department at Deloitte. Thanks for this.
Of course.
Heck of a debut on the show. And thanks to those of you. I'm envisioning someone whose life changes from listening to this. And I'm not saying that lightly.
I really do believe that.
And that's where it comes down to you as well in sharing this episode with somebody who you know with whom it could make a very big difference. And we thank you for that. Again, at abchamber.ca, you can learn more about what we're talking about. Thanks to the three of you.
Thanks.
Hey, I mentioned those like wild winter cyclists. And I did want to take a second to those of you. This is a hard swerve away from what we've been talking about. But we heard from Brandon, who's a Real Talker. And he sent me an email to talk@ryanjesperson.com. He says, Jespo, I was wanted to put something on your radar in case it's not already. This is a local reference to those of you in the city of Edmonton, and you can learn more at coldcityclassic.com this Saturday, this weekend. So if you're listening to this as we're doing this episode, that's going to be on the 20th of January of 2024. The Cold City Classic is going on. A couple dozen cyclists riding laps for 12 hours in Rundle Park on Saturday, raising money for Boyle Street and those that are experiencing homelessness in Edmonton right now. You can support them by pledging. You can sign up to ride. There's
still time to do that. You can volunteer as well or share with anybody that might be interested. We're going to be pushing it out on our social channels. We're more than happy to support this incredible initiative. The Boyle Street, as a community service, needs our support now more than ever before. That's coldcityclassic.com. This conversation on Real Talk today was presented by our friends at Eden Landscaping, bringing outdoor spaces to life. This is the time of year where their design team is working hard on all of those projects that they're going to be kicking off and launching in the spring. If you're looking to get that water feature done, maybe get that outdoor kitchen built under a beautiful pergola, you name it, your imagination can dream it up, they can make it happen. Get that conversation started today with a free consultation at landscapeedmonton.ca. That's Eden Landscaping. Every Friday, we give you a chance to blow off a little steam, to get the attention of, I don't know, 15,000 people and say what needs to be said. Every Friday, courtesy of our friends at the DQs of Northwest Edmonton and Sherwood Park, that's Palisades, Namao, Newcastle, Westmount, and Baseline Road, we give you a chance to bring the heat. We want to hear what you have to say. Bring your hot takes. It's The Flamethrower, presented by the DQs of Northwest Edmonton and Sherwood Park. And Kyle is in touch with the show. He says, I'm not going to beat around the bush. Just like Real Talk does, I'm going to get straight to the point. Wind and solar would not have saved our asses, and they're not going to save our butt in future winters either. I know this is going to light a fire under a bunch of you. He says, the only viable solution to making it through winters like we're seeing right now is nuclear and natural gas. He says, we need to have the capacity to provide up to 120% of peak load in a regulatory compliant manner. He says, hell, we can produce more and sell to our neighbors in BC and Montana who are not going to be diversifying in the way that I think we need to. Kyle says Alberta should never have this power problem again after this winter unless the Liberals or NDP get their wish. That from Kyle. What about this one from Stan, who says, Jespo, I was listening to your December 19th episode, Trend Watch, trends in jobs, retail, and real estate. I love that one. He says, my job requires me to deal with provincial, federal, and municipal workers on a daily basis. Most of them, it seems, still working from home. My issue is that if private businesses are finding that work from home is too inefficient, does this inherently mean that government workers are inefficient as well? He says, I'm seeing what's happening going on right now, and it doesn't seem like there's any metrics monitoring the performance or the productivity level of anybody that's being paid by the public purse. He says, I have a few friends who work for the city in a work from home scenario, and after a few beers, they start telling me about watching Netflix during the day, regular naps, walking their dogs. He says, now I know that not every government worker is going to take advantage of this, but it is frustrating to hear stories like this while my property taxes are going way up. That from Stan. I'm glad you got it off your chest, buddy. How about this from Daniel, who writes in and he says, a while ago, people were talking about the Humboldt driver, the driver that caused that crash, and whether or not he should be deported. He says, it got me thinking about that Manitoba bus crash. He says, remember that? He says, most people probably won't. There's been very little coverage of the follow-up about the charges of the driver of that bus in Manitoba. From what I understand, the driver ran through a stop sign on the highway, killing all those people. Sound familiar? The driver was at fault, just like in Humboldt. Where's the outcry around that driver? He says, by this time, 6 months after the crash, we knew the driver's name of that Humboldt tragedy. He says, can you please be looking into this more? He says, I'd hate to think that police and prosecutors are protecting the Manitoba bus driver, who is most likely a Canadian citizen, not an immigrant. He says, and as for that Humboldt driver, Canada has deported immigrants for far less than multiple counts of manslaughter. That from Daniel, who says, I listen to your podcast from Calgary. Thanks, Daniel. This from Peter, or no, this is from Brad, who was talking about Peter. Peter was on the show just the other day. Peter McCaffrey, who joined us to talk about, well, basically, we were kind of getting into whether or not Danielle Smith should be sharing a stage with Tucker Carlson. Did you see that episode? Really, really good episode. I love that debate, the back and forth between those two. And Peter McCaffrey from the Alberta Institute says, yeah, Alberta's premier should be up there, no problem. What do you have against free speech, right? Well, Brad writes in and he says, oh, Peter wants to be like Tucker Carlson. He wants to be able to say whatever, no consequence. It's just discussion. It's just asking questions. He accuses others of conflating and being disingenuous. He says, that's everything Peter does. His arguments are thinner than wet tissue paper. He says, I loved seeing him flounder and flop on your show, Jespo. His logic made no sense unless you're trying to make excuses for terrible people and terrible ideas. He says, frankly, I'm disturbed that Peter sees no issue with our premier attending this event. It tells me a lot about his moral compass. He says, the premier attending this is wrong. It's Alberta's reputation, not Danielle Smith's. And Brad says, and while we're at it, Jespo, I didn't love when you said that Tucker Carlson is an entertainer. His skill at what he does is admired, but that's missing the gravity of what he does. You know, January 6th doesn't happen without Tucker Carlson and his show. He legitimized all of the crazy on Fox News. The power of big media figures is grossly underestimated, and I railed about this too much, to be honest with you, when Danielle Smith had a radio show. She thought, for example, it didn't matter when she promoted ivermectin. He says people took real-life action based on what she and other guests said on the show. That from Brad. And finally, this is a good news follow-up for the flamethrower. Do you remember a guy by the name of Mike that wrote in a while ago and he was so pissed off about the zipper merge? People couldn't figure out how to properly zipper merge. You remember that one? Well, Mike writes in follow-up and he says, now, I don't know if this is because of Real Talk or not. It probably is. He says, I noticed the other day there are now electronic message boards on the road telling people that the merge point is 300 meters ahead, asking them to move forward and zip together. He says, now again, I don't know if it was Real Talk or not, but I'm not saying it wasn't. That from Mike. We love the follow-ups. You can fire up your flamethrower anytime by sending us an email to talk@ryanjesperson.com. Coming up on next week's show, we're going to be getting back into the stories that matter most to you. If there's something you're not hearing on this show that you'd love us to tackle, you know where to find us. Make it a great weekend, friends, and thanks for being a part of Real Talk.
Real Talk is hosted by Ryan Jesperson. Executive producer, Josh Dunford. Technical producer, John Hicks. General manager, Katie Cook-Chivers. Account coordinator, Lawrence Derlego. Human resources, Lena Shepherd. Website design, Mike Johnston. Voiceover by me, Carrie Skelton. Real Talk's editorial board is Supriya Duvetti, Ahmed Ali, Brandy Morin, Ann Castleman, Corey Hogan, Harmon Pandola, Catherine O'Neill, and Chris Henderson. Member Emerita, Julie Rohr. Real Talk is recorded in Edmonton, Alberta, on Treaty 6 territory, the traditional and ancestral territory of the Cree, Dene, Blackfoot, Soto, and Nakota Sioux, home to the Métis settlements and the Métis Nation of Alberta. Real Talk is a Relay project. For more, check out ryanjesperson.com.